The Fancy Film Fellows employs a frank discussion of cinema that includes adult language and descriptions of mature situations. We have no concern for spoilers, so be warned, you might learn more than you'd care to know.
All right. Well, what do? Should I brace myself? Should I relax? Should I lean in?
It's a 747 coming at you. If you could wiggle your ears and clap your tinkerbell, and it wouldn't make any difference.
Okay.
Don't you get it?
I think so. The attempt to hold on to sanity too tight is insane.
What?
To gain control, you gotta lose control, right?
I can't hear you!
Hello, fancy friends. Welcome back to another episode of Fancy Film Fellows Presents Pitch Sesh. We are continuing in our trend of more 1999 related podcasts. I almost said movies, which I guess is technically not inaccurate, but still.
Yeah.
My name is Basil. I am hosting today, and I am joined by my two co-hosts, Ruben.
Hi, I'm Ruben.
And Patrick.
Hi, I'm Patrick.
Yeah, and so... for those of you who have listened to Pitch Sesh before, we're doing things a little differently. And if you never have, then the difference won't be noticed. But generally, what we do is kind of come up with an idea and pitch it to the other people. And then they help fill out all the details. We'll be doing a little bit of that, but we decided... in honor of 1999 to do it a little differently. So 1999 was right in the heyday of video stores. And as people who grew up around that time, we saw a lot of movies in video stores where we saw their box art, their little posters, and never saw the movie. So you could show us one of those things and be like, whoa, I've seen that a million times, but I have no idea what that movie's about other than what I can vaguely glean from the poster.
I actually worked at Blockbuster Video in 1999 for about 3 months.
Nice.
In 1999, 2000.
Damn.
Uh-huh. One of those years.
You're a real Tarantino. Mm-hmm.
So even more so than me, who just spent all his free time at Blockbuster in Hollywood. You saw these videos even more so. So we each picked a movie that we had seen the poster for a ton, but did not see the movie ever and did not know what the movie was about. And based on the poster, tried to invent a plot for the movie. We could, if we so chose, could do just whatever you feel like, some kind of silly nonsense, or you could try to actually guess what the movie might be like and see how close you get. Either way, after each movie, I'll go ahead and look up the Wikipedia and describe what the real plot is. I have not done it for mine yet, so I still don't know. And then after the person's done pitching, the other two co-hosts can kind of jump in with some suggestions or whatever comes to mind that might also be fun to add. Patrick volunteered to go first. His choice was the 1999 movie, The Story of Us. Tell us the plot of The Story of Us.
All right. Well, you know, I'm gleaning from the poster here. We've got two stars. We've got Bruce Willis, and I think that's Michelle Pfeiffer. I'm like thinking of the picture, and I'm like, it's probably her. It's probably Michelle Pfeiffer. Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. It is Michelle Pfeiffer. Okay, so yes. This seems like it's I don't know. It's a love story, from what I can tell on the poster here. So we've got, you know, Bruce Willis kind of leaning in close to Michelle Pfeiffer to give her a kiss. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming that this is a romantic story of two people, and maybe it's about them like meeting in college and like courting one another, and then they maybe it skips to a little later in their relationship and they're married, and then I think one of them gets sick, and looking at this poster, it just jumps out to me that like Michelle Pfeiffer is probably the one that's sick because she's got her eyes closed. Something about that sort of like says, I'm sick or I'm wounded in some way. Mm-hmm. I think maybe it's like maybe not cancer, but maybe it's something like similarly serious like that. Like she gets sick and then Bruce Willis has to like tend to her. And then they get through this like rocky period in their relationship, and she survives. And then they go on to, maybe like it shows us the rest of their relationship, and they have like children, and then their children have like some drama, but they get through it. And then it's like them as old people at the very end. And it's like, oh, this whole relationship. And maybe we end the movie with one of them dying. And it's like, oh, the whole story was just this relationship of two people from when they met to when they parted, I guess.
Featuring an original Shania Twain song called The Story of Us.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yep.
I was just going to say I like it. I'm trying to think of like what would be some good, along the way scenes to add to that.
Yeah, I think there might have to be like some sort of like evil homewrecker who threatens to break up their marriage at some point. We maybe get I don't know who would play the homewrecker in this scenario, and if it would be a woman trying to break up Bruce Willis from Michelle Pfeiffer, if it would be a man trying to break up Michelle Pfeiffer from Bruce Willis. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, because it's the 90s, I see like a skeezy dude being more the case.
Dermot Mulroney.
I was gonna say somebody with like somebody with shifty eyes.
Mm-hmm. Justin Theroux.
For some reason, I'm picturing Harry Connick Jr. in my head right now. I don't know why.
He doesn't have shifty eyes. He has a gentle cowboy soul.
When yeah, he I sings, was gonna he say does. Maybe somebody from her work, but. Harry Connick Jr., unless she like works at a feed store or something. I don't know.
Or maybe it's like an older, more powerful man, and he's trying to like muscle in and mm-hmm. use his his money to lure her away.
Like Robert Redford, an Indecent Proposal.
I think I'm just combining plots of other movies now.
Well, that's the way to do it, I think.
Yeah, just it's a mishmash. And I'm also trying to like glean from other Rob Reiner movies now. I'm like, all right, what mm-hmm. else have I seen Rob Reiner do? I assume
Misery.
Well, I was gonna say I assume there's a lot of long conversations with kind of goofy dialogue in this too. A la When Harry Met Sally, since this is another love story.
Sure. Bruce Willis is in a metal band.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't put it past Bruce Willis to have some scenes of him singing though, because this is when he was still like trying to make the whole like
Bruno thing.
I'm a lounge singer thing work or whatever.
I do not remember that part of Bruce Willis's career. Yep.
He definitely had a phase where he was like, I can do anything. I'm gonna be a rock star. Although it wasn't like a rock star though. He was more like singing covers and.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was definitely more lounge singery.
Yeah, you can find them on YouTube. They're pretty embarrassing. not great. The Return of Bruno, I think, is the name of his album.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think That would be a lot of fun, seeing Bruce Willis and Michelle Pfeiffer in old person makeup, like really bad old person makeup at the end. It'd be really cool.
Yeah, and I think there has to be a scene where Bruce Willis gets really upset because his kids are listening to like rock music or something at some point. Mm-hmm. Where he's like, "What is this crap?" And it's like, mm-hmm. I don't know what he would. It's probably like, I don't know if, new metal hadn't really like hit its stride yet, but it would probably be something like
pretty close though. I mean,
Korn, yeah, almost. Maybe it might be Marilyn something Manson like that.
Thing. Some of those songs.
He was definitely pretty huge by then.
Yeah.
That just made me think this is totally or only partway on topic, but I wondered whether or not a movie where like the actors are, you know, somewhere around 40 and it's supposed to be one of these stories and it ends when they're like 80, but like ends in the future and they're like flying cars and stuff.
Yeah. I see one of those scenes where in a hospital bed and there's just flying cars going by the window.
Limp Bizkit's cover of Faith came out in 1997, so I think we were in the middle of.
Wow. I guess we would have been right in the middle of that.
I feel like that was the very beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say in 1999, that would have been sophomore year of high school, and that was when I was listening to a lot of Follow the Leader. The album was pretty huge.
Nookie came out in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
That's what he did it all for.
So their kid, his kids would have been listening to Limp Bizkit and Korn or something.
Call the Leader was August 1998.
Yeah.
Although I'm assuming like we're making this movie like happen in the future somewhere, so they'll be listening to some kind of like incomprehensible like future music. It's like really bad future music that they come up with.
That sounds good. Actually, now that I think about it, I'm pretty sure that's how Click ends, or at least it's like a weirdo future because he's like very old. I don't think there's flying cars, but there's definitely like weirdo attempts at some kind of future tech stuff for the very end of the movie.
The hospital is very Web 2.0 like. Mm-hmm. Everything looks like a Facebook web page. Medical technology.
For some reason, the movie that comes to mind is Bicentennial Man for me, for whatever reason. I'm like, oh, this is what they were imagining the future would be like.
Yeah, that's one I've still never seen. I tried to put it on the list, but nobody voted for it for the quarantine movie watch.
I saw that movie in the theater when it came out.
You're a little bit younger than us, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think at that time was at the time of me being really into reading Ebert's reviews, and I feel like I remember he hated it, that it was really schmaltzy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It is schmaltzy looking back on it.
Mm-hmm. Any other additions before we jump to?
No, I think that's all. I did want to just mention that like the title, The Story of Us, is like one of the most bland things I've ever heard in my life. Like,
yeah.
It could literally be about anything. Mm-hmm. It's like there's a story and there's us in it. So you don't even really know any specifics about us.
Yeah. So
do you think it's better or worse than the TV show called This Is Us?
I think it's a little bit better because we know there is a story.
Mm-hmm.
This Is Us.
I know one actual thing about this movie, if we want to.
Sure. What's the thing you know?
It's a remarriage story. So it's Bruce Willis and Michelle Pfeiffer have been married for a while, and it's not good anymore. And it's one of those like, are we going to be able to fall in love again stories? Mm-hmm. So it's a falling in love story, but like for an already married couple.
It's the you can find love again with your partner crowd. It's for the you know, do you like pina coladas and getting caught in the rain crowd?
Yeah, exactly.
I remember that not because I've seen the movie or I remember the trailer, because I think the trailer came and went without my noticing it, but because I had a conversation in college with my favorite professor about how they don't make movies or really stories that are just about married couples, like, just trying to, like, get through it. All stories about couples are about them coming together. So if they're married, they have to re-come together because they're broken apart. And he was like, what was that stupid Bruce Willis movie that came out a couple years ago that was about that? And he was like, oh, yeah, The Story of Us. Nice. So that's the only reason that I know that. And I agree. I don't know why, because it's actually one of the more interesting human things. It's like watching couples just sort of work through normal couple stuff.
Yeah.
It's like really interesting. and they're always like, no, I just want to, everything is an origin story. Origin stories for superheroes, origin stories for couples, origin stories for the second act of a marriage.
it's
yeah, that was always one of those.
Yeah, well, it's because you can't explain this movie's going to be about a married couple being married to, like, a coked up executive and be like, so it's these married people and they're married. It's like, what happens to their marriage? Nothing. It's just them being married. It's like, that sounds like the most boring thing ever. Get it out of here.
I remember when I was a big fan of sitcoms, finding that very frustrating, that it was like people were always like, on the verge of getting together, and then they finally would, and then it would just like break up really shortly afterwards, and I was be like, well, thanks for making me root for this. Like,
Buffy the Vampire Slayer technically figured out the problem by constantly killing people and relationships.
Good old Joss Whedon.
All right, so here's the real plot per Wikipedia. Ben Jordan and his wife have been married for 15 years. They have two children, a nice home, and a comfortable life. Their happy marriage, however, turns into a sham, a performance they deliver daily for the benefit of their children, while behind the scenes they cannot stand each other anymore. Sending their kids off to summer camp, Ben and Katie commence a trial separation, during which both try to recall what it is about the other that led them to fall in love in the first place.
Wow.
Sounds really bad. I think I remember reading Roger Ebert's negative review of it, and one of the things he said was that when they're mean to each other during that part of the movie, they're like so brutally mean that he's like, I don't believe that I guess these people could ever get back together.
Damn, the ways they roasted each other so hard, there's no coming back from that.
I'm never going to watch this movie, but that makes me slightly interested in seeing it. Especially because I think people can be really mean to each other and stay together for a long time.
That's true.
Or even like each other, actually. Sometimes you're meanest to people you really like.
Not a great way to be, but there it is. All right. Ruben. Your choice was Pushing Tin, also from 1999, obviously. Tell us the plot of Pushing Tin.
Mine is very pitchy, so it's like the first act of the movie, and then like if you guys want to together complete the rest of the plot, you're welcome to. So John Cusack, so the poster that I saw that I knew is just John Cusack kind of looking like a little bit... like emotionlessly forward, and then like Billy Bob Thornton smugly smiling, and then just like someone laying on a runway with an airplane flying overhead. So that's the only poster I'd seen. So that was all that I knew about the movie, was that something to do with airplanes and Billy Bob Thornton and John Cusack were in it. So John Cusack plays an air traffic controller in Dallas, Texas, named Marty Valentin. He's the best damn air traffic controller in the U.S., in part because he knows the air trafficking manual backwards and forwards. Ever since his father died in an air traffic mishap, he swore he would do everything he could to prevent that from happening again. Courtney Thorne Smith plays a flight attendant and his longtime girlfriend named Maggie Palmer, though Marty's abidance to the rules has stagnated their relationship as well. Former Gulf War veteran and pilot Rock Grunderson, played by Billy Bob Thornton, shows up one day and upsets the balance of everything, acting as a loose cannon. Not only does he often refuse Cusack's advice and commands, but he starts flirting with his girl. Along for the wacky but dramatic ride are his best friend and fellow air traffic controller Mekhi Phifer, the unusual janitor who confuses everyone with his hilarious but sometimes astute wisdom, played by Jerry Stoller. Also featuring Steven Weber, Alan Ruck, and Janelle Maloney as passengers, Enrico Colant, Tony, Lauren Holly, and Perry Gilpin play other airport staff. Important slash titular quote, that's not just some 175,000 pound of piece of tin you're pushing around up there. It lives and breathes just like the people inside of it. If you don't listen to her, you're liable to lose her. Potential Marty Bellington nickname, the Tin Man. Nice.
Oh God! I wish I had put that much effort into mine. Holy shit! Lives and breathes. that sounds like what Tom Cruise says in Mission Impossible 3 when they ask him about like traffic studies or whatever.
It's actually basically a worse slash play on the quote from Speed Racer when he says that a car is alive, because it's a quote that out of context sounds very silly and then is actually very like works for me in Speed Racer, and I'm like, but it always sounded stupid to me out of context, that I was like, I'm just gonna take it out of context, make it sound stupid. Plus, I think titular lines are very funny when they're not good.
pushing 10 around.
Oh man, pushing 10.
Yeah, I can't add too much as far as because this is the only one of the three that I've actually seen, so I do know the plot of it, and it is hard to build off your idea, I'll say that.
I was just looking now so I could remind myself of the poster, and I saw a different poster with other actors on it looking very differently, which would have given me a different vibe than the one. Sure.
That's the only poster I've seen too, is the one that you referred to. That's the one I recognize from the cover art.
Anderson.
Doesn't he sound like a Gulf War veteran, loose cannon pilot, Rock Grunderson?
Yeah, there has to be.
Do you have any idea what should happen in the third act, Patrick? Well, I can pitch something.
Yeah, I think there has to be like a big climactic, like airplane landing scene where he has to like rush up to the tower and be like, "Don't follow that order," or whatever. It's like, you got to put your flaps down or whatever. It's like he's got to lead them in. After the power goes out or something, I don't know.
Nice.
Or he has to run airplane, out of the runway and be like, you know, like do semaphore or something, like be like, here, land here.
That sounds about right.
I was thinking maybe it would turn out that Billy Bob Thornton was actually his long lost brother from a different, the same dad, but he never knew his dad because he was like also a vet or something. So he was like on a military base somewhere else in the U.S. and he had sex with a random person. Billy Bob Thornton never knows his dad, figures out that they're actually brothers, Grunderson and Marty Valentin. By the way, his name is Martin Valentin.
Nice.
The Tin Man.
Oh God, that's such a screenwritery thing to do.
Sounds like a great movie. Oh, in man. My opinion, I want to see my fake movie. Also, in case you didn't figure out my other than John Cusack and Billy Bob Thornton casting list, it's all people who are in famous television shows in 1999. Right. So we got someone from Ally McBeal, someone from Frasier, someone from Chicago Hope, someone from King of Queens. I was like, this is a very TV deal, so we're just gonna fill it up with a bunch of TV
character actors. Yeah.
Just shoot me, Enrico Colantoni. Oh, yeah. It was on Just Shoot Me.
He sure was.
God. So much fun.
Yeah. So part of the reason it was hard for me to think of anything is that the movie is about air traffic controllers.
I assume that part was correct.
Yeah. And you weren't far off either. Billy Bob Thornton also plays an air traffic controller, but he is the loose cannon one too.
That's not shocking.
Yeah, he shows up and
it's
also
not a good poster, but it is an accurate poster. Like, I picked up a lot of information from the poster, both sure. in terms of what the movie was about and how I did not want to watch it.
I'm looking at the Wikipedia now, and you are also weirdly right that John Cusack's character is Nick Falzone, and his nickname is The Zone.
Why am I not a screenwriter? Specifically a screenwriter in 1999 when this type of movie got produced.
Jesus, screenwriters are so predictable.
But yes, I'll just read it. But yeah, the basic gist is that John Cusack's actually like the head honcho, super good air traffic controller, like the best of the best. But then Billy Bob Thornton comes in and with his fast and loose style turns out to be even better. And there's the movie's basically like a pissing competition between them of who's the manlier man.
So when I looked at the other poster, I saw that Angelina Jolie was in it. Is there a love triangle or no?
There is between, yes. She's, I think she's Billy Bob Thornton's wife in it, but then John Cusack tries to sleep with her, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Okay, let me just read it, actually. Nick and his fellow air traffic controllers at the New York TRACON pride themselves on their ability to handle the intense stress of being a controller for one of the busiest airspaces in the country, even boasting of the 50% dropout rate for new additions to the staff who are unable to cope with the pressure. Joined by the quiet and confident Russell Bell. Oh yeah, so it's like it's like a weird reverse typing where John Cusack is like the flashy aggressive one, mm-hmm. and then Billy Bob Thornton's like the stoic but like manlier one, and he's I remember a sequence where he pulls off some crazy stunt and lines up like a million planes all in a row in like the perfect thing, and everyone freaks out about it, and then afterwards they're going out to eat, and John Cusack's like trying to drive his Lamborghini like super super fast to like show that he's better. And Billy Bob Thornton like falls asleep in the ride over or something like that. Yeah. And then Nick encounters, that's John Cusack is Nick. Russell is Billy Bob Thornton, encounters Russell's despondent young wife, Mary, who is sobbing over a grocery cart full of alcohol in the grocery store. Nick is also married. He cheats on his wife with Mary. They have sex. Blah, blah, blah. And someone wrote an extremely long, I don't know if I want to read the entire thing, but I think it ends up that, Kate Blanchett plays John Cusack's wife. And Nick becomes increasingly paranoid that Russell's going to seek revenge by having sex with his wife. How does it end? They do some weird stunt at the end where they stand on the runway right behind where a plane's going to land so that they get like blown around by the turbulence, and the stunt has a profound effect on Nick and he returns back to his life after his after everything fell apart for him post cheating on his wife, and reconciles with Kate Blanchett.
Does Pushington mean anything?
I think it's pretty close to what you were saying, that I think it is like the gallows humor type of joke about pushing tin around him, around the sky.
Yeah, so they, I mean, I don't know how well this film did at the time, but they made the mistake of casting Angelina Jolie and Kate Blanchett because they're going to pull focus from the core of the film, which is the conflict between Cusack and Thornton. Like, that's your film. Like, those are two very different people and actors. And so, like, it's, I'm sure it's not good, but that idea in itself, just putting John Cusack and Billy Bob Thornton and sort of letting them play off each other is... does make sense. So that's why I chose someone bland to be the love interest, is because she's more just a pawn in their games. Sure.
It's true. Yeah, it did not do well. Budget $33 million, box office $8.4 million. So
Also aren't
I was Billy originally gonna cast Calista Flockhart as the love interest, but she's older than John Cusack, which
Hollywood
was surprising
would never
to me.
Do that.
Yeah, that's why why I didn't do it. So I just chose a different actress from Ally McBeal.
Nice. All right. So
aren't Angelina Jolie and Billy Bob Thornton related? Also, isn't she like a step?
No, they were married for a while. Oh, okay. At this point, in fact,
Wasn't there like some? There was some sort of like controversy about that, wasn't there?
No, there was just a weird thing where when she won for Girl Interrupted, her date was her brother, and they had a too close seeming relationship that seemed creepy the way that.
Okay. I thought it was okay. I'm thinking of.
I mean,
else.
People did look down on their relationship, but just in like your normal sort of Puritan, like. Judgmental terms, like they were very vocal and like PDA type couple.
Yeah,
when they were together.
Okay.
So people were like, "Oh, they're putting it out there. They're too weird." And,
just and, mixing my Angelina Jolie scandal now.
And then also, I think a lot of people did a bunch of silly pathologizing about Angelina Jolie's. Supposed daddy issues with her dad John Voight or whatever because they're the same age or whatever.
I guess so.
It's like this is okay when we do it in a movie, but now that I see two people doing it in real life, I'm uncomfortable. All right, so now my choice, Lost and Found, starring David Spade and Sophie Marceau. The poster is David Spade naked holding a dog over his junk and Sophie Marceau in a dress sort of standing behind him. So my premise is that so Sophie Marceau's kind of a fancy lady and David Spade's sort of a schlubby whatever dude. Classic rom-com setup in that regard. And one day Sophie Marceau is out walking her dog and the dog gets off leash, goes running, chasing a different dog, runs into a house through the doggy door. Sophie Marceau runs up to the house, is knocking on the door, and David Spade's like in the shower. He quickly gets out of the shower, answers the door. And she tries to explain, and then he sees the two dogs running around. She's like, that's my dog, blah, blah, blah. He's chasing after the dog. Towel falls off. He grabs the dog. He's very excited and then realizes that he's now naked, pushes the dog down to cover up his junk so we get that iconic moment. And this is their sort of meet cute. But unfortunately, Sophie Marceau is going through some stuff at that time. He tries to kind of ask her out, but she's too busy with other things going on. And so he concocts a scheme to pretend that his dog is missing so that he can ask for her help to to track the dog down. And so they do. And then as they're going around, putting up flyers, asking around town, they start to like one another. And, you know, she opens up about what's going on in her life. He tells her about himself. As they're asking around, they start hearing about some kind of infamous dog napping ring that's going on in Los Angeles. And so she's like, oh, this could be a great lead. We should pursue this. And he, of course, because his dog's not actually missing, has to be like, no, and hem and haw. And she's a little bit confused by that, but then sort of lets it go. Eventually, at some point on a sort of date type of thing, she suggests going back to his place, and he's sort of reticent, but then also very horny. So then he decides to try and
classic just, David Spade.
Go for it. And of course has to try and hide the dog. And then you get one of those classic jokes where they're making out and she hears like barking somewhere in the and then he has to pretend that he was making weird barking sounds while they're making out. But then of course she discovers the truth, and he is furious with him for making everything up. He tries to explain. She storms out. Then we get the classic like little bit of the movie where they're not together and doing their own thing. And then she comes home one day and finds that her dog is missing. At first she thinks that he has gone insane and kidnapped her dog, but it turns out he did not do that. It was, of course, the dog nappers that were mentioned previously. So then they have to work together to try and track down this dog napping ring. They find it and have to like try and sneak in, and it turns into one of those classic 80s and 90s comedy
third finale action set piece. Yeah,
exactly. The dog nappers have guns and it's all very scary, but then they manage to escape partially by setting all the dogs free, and so we get an action sequence with the dogs attacking.
I love this scene. I can see it. Hundreds of dogs just overrunning them.
And obviously, yeah, eventually the cops arrive, arrest the dog nappers, and we get a happily ever after moment. She forgives him because of his bravery during all of this. And then the coda would be like 1 year later, and they're married and they have babies. And then the camera pans down to like a litter of puppies with their two dogs. And
the people fucked and the dogs fucked.
Yep.
The end. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. That actually sounds like a pretty fun movie.
I'm going to make one suggestion. I think that's all very good. So I already added it to my film, but I'm going to, if you want, I'm going to add it to your film as well, which is I think that the like mid to late 90s was the era of the black best friend. So I'm going to put Cuba Gooding Jr. Works in the same office as David Spade.
Sure.
And part of the reason why things spiral out of control is because Cuba Gooding Jr. does really well with women and is like confident. And so he's mm-hmm. trying to encourage David Spade to be confident as well, but he doesn't know what that looks like. So he goes way overboard.
I like
which
it.
Is how everything goes awry.
Mm-hmm.
And Mekhi Phifer is busy starring in Pushington, so he can't be in it.
Yeah,
that's true. I like
oh,
it.
Man.
Anything else?
No. I like that third act idea of having all the dogs set loose and you know, directed roughing up Buster the bad Keaton. Guys. Just very Beethoven-esque, I feel.
Oh, that's true. There's a sequence like that in Beethoven. All right, so what is the actual plot of this movie?
Okay, so you were weirdly on point with a lot of this.
Restaurant actually. Owner Dylan Ramsey is a head over heels in love with his new neighbor, a French cellist named Lila. In a desperate attempt to garner her affections, he kidnaps her beloved pet dog and offers to help her find him on a phantom dog hunt. A wrench is thrown in his plans, however, when the dog swallows his best friend's diamond ring, and things get worse for Dylan as Lila's ex-fiancée, Renee, arrives to win her back.
Well, that's funny because I initially thought of that as the as a sort of plan that he kidnaps her dog, but then I was like, maybe that seems too mean even for Hollywood at this time, but apparently not.
It was not. Turns out.
I'm gonna list off some of the other cast in this movie that I find funny. Martin Sheen as Millstone. Artie Lang as Wally Slack.
Millstone.
John Lovitz as Uncle Harry Briggs. Whoa. And Frankie Muniz as Boy on TV Movie.
Everything's coming up, Millstone.
I wonder what that TV movie is.
I guess we gotta watch it to find out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wonder what Martin Sheen's role is in Lost and Found.
Yeah.
Well, since he's named Millstone, I assume he's bringing someone down. Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's his boss. No, he's a restaurant owner. Maybe it's her boss.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe.
This was the same year that West Wing started, so he was doing both West Wing and Lost and Found at the same time.
Two pinnacles of his career.
working for Sorkin one day and for whoever directed this movie the next.
Jeff Pollock. The co-creator of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. All right. Well, I think that about wraps it up. Thanks, everyone, for joining.
Not much to add.
Mm-hmm. What'd you say?
I said not much to add to this concept.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I did kind of, once I started going with it, I was like, oh, I guess I could write this whole thing pretty easy.
I meant the general pitch test concept. Like, there's not a lot to argue about or discuss. Like, it's, we try to make the best jokes that we can based on the premise. I guess we could choose whose pitch we like best. I don't know. Or we could just end it.
Yeah, I don't think we need to make it a competition.
As far as the movie, movie I want to see, I think it's Basil's. But as far as the planning and the pitch, I think it was Ruben's, because I liked how you brought in all the character actors. I was like, that's good. He's got a cast list all ready to go.
Yeah, I forgot to
mention that Steven Weber, if you didn't recognize his name, was one of the two stars of the TV show Wings. So he has to have like a line like at some point about how he hates planes or being around planes or he has trouble with planes. He's like, I hate spending time in the airport. I don't know why I'm here today or something like that.
I'm terrified of wings.
All right.
That's it.
I just that is it. Bull. It Thanks. Gave me wings. No, that's it.
They should have got him to be the spokesman. Although I guess those commercials did plenty well. Thanks everyone for listening. Thank you both for your fun pitches. And I'm not sure what we're doing next. So I'm not sure if it'll be next, but since video stores came up, I think before the end of the year, we'll do a 1999 spitball related to video stores, as we all have quite a lot of memories about them. So I would guess, especially Ruben, having worked in them at one. Thanks again for listening. And that is all. Bye.
Bye. Thank you. Bye.